From the Basement, the only blockchain podcast that interviews the forgotten and downtrodden devs that actually do the work, hosted by me, Martin G. And this episode, we have Matt Bradbury from R3. We're going to be talking all about the Corda design language and why he came up with it in the first place. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Martin. Great to be here.
Now, Matt joined R3 in October 2016 as employee 70, which means this weekend he's expecting a carriage clock from David Rutter as it's his fourth anniversary. And as abstract solution engineer, he possibly has the most exotic job title at R3. I think all those things are correct, are they not?
Yes, they are. The first piece of engineering for this job was coming up with the name for the job. So, and that was pretty abstract. So yeah, it all fits together.
but before we go any further, let's get to know Matt by running through these 20 questions. What company do you work for?
I work for R3.
What do you do there?
At the moment, as you mentioned a moment ago, I'm an abstract solution engineer, but previously I've been a project manager in the lab, in the original collaborative lab. I then moved on to be a delivery manager helping our clients, then a solution engineer, also helping our clients, but on the technical side of things. And now I'm an abstract solution engineer, which is basically helping our clients without the need to actually talk to any clients. So I get the time to do the thinking behind the solutioning.
Sounds like a dream job.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
How old were you when you started programming?
I did the obligatory 10 Hello World go-to basic programs when I was kind of 10 or 11, but then didn't really do anything till university. But then I had a very large break before I did any more programming. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit.
Okay. Do you have a nickname?
Just Matt.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Derby.
Where did you go to uni and what did you study?
So I went to university in York, which was fantastic. I studied electronic engineering, but I took the version of the course which was electronic engineering with music technology systems. So I'm interested in music, have been for a long time. So I got to do a proper degree, but I also got to build kind of studio equipment and record things in studios and play my guitar. for part of my degree, so it was similar to the abstract solution engineer. It was a great fit for what I wanted to do.
And that explains why I'm talking to you whilst you're sitting in a room surrounded by musical instruments, and you even have soundproofing on the walls.
I do. That's my concession to a lockdown working environment. I put soundproofing around my, well, sound conditioning actually, so that it sounds like a nice, quiet, non-reflective studio.
Oh, awesome. When did you start working in software?
I did a degree in electronics, so there's a bit of software in that. But after that, I actually went off and trained as a chartered accountant, became a chartered accountant, and did that for a number of years.
Really? No way.
I didn't like it very much. And that's the polite version for this podcast. and I felt a pull back to the more technical, and that kind of manifested itself in many years of working in the banks, in investment banks, kind of doing business analysis and IT project management. But it got to a stage probably about 8 years ago, I was fed up of talking about what other people were building and decided that I wanted to do some of that building myself. I wanted to do the creating of it. Started coding on iPhone applications, MATLAB, AI sort of stuff, and really just followed my interests.
Yeah, there's a real sense, I think, you know, talking to BAs and PMs, of they're sort of on the outside looking in sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. But I tell you what, having done that, it really does give you a good basis for doing the software.
What's your operating system of choice?
Mac OS.
What is your programming language of choice?
It's Kotlin. Of course.
Of course, yeah. What was when was the last time you wrote some code, and what did it do?
We've just released a load of new documentation on Corda App Design Language, which we're going to talk about a little bit later on. I've written an example app which goes with all of the documentation, so you can not only read about this stuff, but you can actually see it coded up in action, and hopefully that will, you know, that will help people.
What's your favourite music to listen to whilst you code?
Kind of like rock, alternative rock, Foo Fighters, Nirvana, that sort of thing. So I tend to go with what I know. The music has to be enjoyable, but not require my attention, because my attention's on making sure the silly thing will compile. So something which is in the background, mostly to get rid of the noise of the children banging around and things like that.
Name one skill you think all programmers should have.
Communication, and specifically communication of their ideas, because nothing is more frustrating than having this kind of idea in your head and not being able to get it across to other people.
And here we are, the killer question. Agile, is it a force for good or for bad?
Agile is infinitely better than a waterfall methodology. Having been in the banks for many years, and they're wedded, or in the past they have been wedded to waterfall, and it's just an absolute disaster. So not waterfall, so agile is an improvement over that. However, if you go totally agile and you're just getting random requests that are coming in from a product owner, and you're just coding whatever it will take to make those things work, then you miss the ability to step back and think about what the kind of core of the design that you're doing should be. So I think there isn't really a name for it, or there isn't a name that I know, but there's some compromise between gathering enough about a problem to understand its moving parts and come up with the shape of a solution, then using your iterative kind of high levels of feedback approaches that you get from Agile. But to put my rider on it, you can do both of those approaches, or even a combination of those approaches, blindly. And if you do that, you're probably going to get into trouble, because what you really need is somebody to own the vision and own the delivery. And that normally has to be somebody who's not necessarily right in the detail, but somebody who can, you know, I know where we're trying to get to, and I can smell when something's going wrong, and they can chase it down until it gets sorted out. And that doesn't really matter what approach you use, as long as you've got that person.
Okay. Do you or have you ever owned any Bitcoin?
No Bitcoin. I do own some Ethereum.
Ooh.
But I've lost the password for it.
Oh no. How long have you been using Corda for?
I have been using it for 4 years, which ties nicely to your introduction. So yes, my anniversary Saturday of joining, 4 years since I joined R3, and pretty much got stuck into Corda straight away.
Okay, so better question then, maybe. Why did you get into Corda?
So this kind of comes back to my history in the banks, and I was kind of I'm solving problems on technology that's 10 or 20 years old, and I could see the stuff I was doing was declining in importance as well. And so I took a decision, said to myself, all right, no, I want to be on the front of a wave of new technology. And at that point, in kind of 2014, 2015, blockchain was starting to come up, and that was the new big thing. And I thought, well, I'm gonna grab some of that. And so I did. I kind of took some time off from my other job, learned as much as I could about Ethereum as it was, or Bitcoin first and then Ethereum. Forgot to buy any, unfortunately, but learned as much as I could, and then just hung around in the ecosystem, picking up various bits of work until I had enough credibility with my banking background, my blockchain knowledge to get a job at R3, something I'd been trying to do for about 6 months at that point.
Well, so what's the best thing about Corda?
I think there's two parts to this answer. The what you see is what I see promise, because that offers the ability to kind of revolutionize various different industries. And our sales guys can go on about this for a long time, but fundamentally I'm a big believer in that vision for Corda to make those changes. And then the second part of that is from a personal point of view. I just wanted and want to continue to want to be part of something that's new and innovative, and I believe in. Never dull, always interesting. My brain hurts quite a lot, but that's brilliant because we're solving the creative problems, we're coming up with creative ways to do new things. And as an engineer, who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah. Okay, then. So what's the worst thing about Corda?
I think the thing that people need to be careful of a little bit is there's a bit of a privacy gotcha in Corda. There's a danger that you can design Corda apps in not quite the right way, and you can bleed information that you didn't you didn't intend. Now it's perfectly fixable, and actually the CDL stuff is a lot around how to design stuff in a good and a safe way. But if you take the naive, quick approach to it, you can relatively easily design yourself into a few anti-patterns, and that's kind of what it is. It's kind of inherent in the underlying structures of the technology, but it's just a thing which is people need to be aware of.
What's your favorite Corda open source library?
My favorite is probably the account SDK, because it opens up the kind of multi-tenancy or primitives multi-tenancy options. Tokens SDK is great and is a foundation of a lot of what people are doing on Corda. I've got a few personal things I'd like to add onto the token SDK, like being able to generate receipts for actions that have taken place. I'll have to talk to the product guys about that.
Okay. And then finally, what's the best place to start with Corda?
So we've got quite a lot of good documentation. The doc site is great. So just go on there and follow the first few pages, and you'll start to build up a picture of what's going on. I know our developer relations guys have written a number of courses that you can follow along. And there's also, of course, the Corda Slack channel, where you can talk to, I think it's about 5,500 other Corda developers, and ask questions and things like that. So just get stuck in using our documentation. Lots of samples on Corda itself. Of course, you can download it and see some simple Corda apps straight away.
So let's get down to business, as they say in Mulan. And let's talk about the Corda design language. Should we kick off? And why don't you tell us, in a nutshell, what is the Corda design language?
Okay, in a nutshell, it is a structured way to draw Corda smart contract designs, illustrate them operating in action, and then systematically turn them into code. Does that fit in your nut?
That sounds good to me, yeah. Sounds revolutionary.
It's pretty helpful. I'm sure we're going to answer this. It came out of dealing with our professional services clients, and the advantage it gives you going in there with a common language about how to talk to somebody with your clients is...
It's such an interesting idea. Like, what made you come up with it in the first place?
There's kind of what was the need, and there's kind of why was I the person to come up with it. In terms of why I was the person to come up with it, it kind of ties back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier about. I was spending a lot of time in the banks doing business analysis and doing project management, and I got very good at communicating what I wanted to happen without knowing how to express it in code. So I had to find ways of drawing things that should be coded up. But the thing that catalyzed it at R3 and for Corda was I was finding we'd go out to clients and we'd just end up in a bit of a mess. We'd start getting into arguments, and it would sometimes get pretty heated here. Yeah. And we'd be having these heated arguments about what the design should be. And I suddenly realized, you guys think this diagram means two different things. You're having an argument, and the problem is not the idea that you've both got. It's because you've drawn it in such a random way that you both think you're talking about something else. And that was kind of the light bulb moment where I said, well, actually, we need to take this confusion out of this. We need to just have a way which everybody will instantly recognize as, oh, I know what a box means. I know what an arrow means. If we can get that standard way of representing it, then a lot of the aggravation will disappear, and we can get down to just talking about what the actual designs should be. After a few iterations, I started using this kind of proto Corda app design language, and we started getting to consensus on things much, much quicker, and it just made the whole thing just easier and more pleasant. And then carried on building momentum, so the way we represented it got better, more concise. I started using it with other clients, and we started to get really good feedback and say, oh, this is brilliant, this is exactly what we need. And so it's kind of been driven from there.
So what do you do, right? So say you're listening to this and you think, this sounds pretty good, I want to give this a go, you know, But the thing is, like, I'm already halfway through. We're already halfway through this project. Like, is it just too late, do you think? Or you know, is there any useful little bits you could take from CDL?
So it's a tool which you can use at any point in the design process. You can use it up front, which is probably the intuitive way of doing it. We're going to get our design right, then we're going to go and build our first iteration of it. But what I've used it effectively for in the past is when somebody built something, so it's not even halfway through, it's like they've actually built it, you can retrospectively write what they've built in the design language, in the Quadapp design language. And that is very illuminating, because if they've missed something out, they've missed something out of their contract, it's like glaringly obvious when you draw the diagram and you go, oh, hang on. Yes. It may not be obvious when you're looking at, you know, 200 lines of verification code, but when you've drawn it on an A4 piece of paper, and it's quite obvious that somebody can take a malicious step or an unintended step, then you get the kind of auditing verification, where you can use it to effectively audit your designs, or just communicate your designs. There might be nothing wrong with it. So
it could almost be part of the QA process.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were doing it end-to-end design process, you would design your Quadapp or your smart contracts in your Quadapp using Quadapp design language. You'd pass that picture over to QA, and QA would make sure you'd written something which obeys the same constraints that you've got on the diagram.
And I don't know if I'm barking up the wrong tree here, but is there a way that Quadapp design language could help with your kind of test cases and your use cases?
No, absolutely. In fact, that's the new bit that's just come out in the docs. So Quadapp design language is all about putting structure in place. When you're drawing this thing, there are set things that you need to do. There's a set way you need to do your state. So you're reminded you need to write all these bits of the state. There's a set way that you show your commands working. There's a set way that you show constraints over what needs to be in the state. There's a set way to blah, 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 et cetera. There's about 7 or 8 or 9 set things that you need to consider. And that puts you in a set structure, which effectively acts like a checklist to make sure that you've thought about everything that you should think about. Okay. So that's just for drawing the diagram. But then when you convert it into code, you keep the same structure. So it's kind of a systematic way of saying, okay, well, I've got these 8 bits. This is how I turn bit 1 into code. This is how I turn bit 2 into code. And so you're getting comfort that you're implementing everything properly. And then to answer your question, that moves yourself into testing. So you've got these 8 or 9 bits, and you know how you need to test each of those 8 or 9 bits, because they're kind of standard classifications, if you like. So you can write a set of test scripts which you know is covering all of the bases. And once you've got that structure, you have a lot more confidence that what you've designed is right, what you've designed has been implemented correctly, and then the tests will check the implementation.
Who do you see using CDL the most?
I think there's lots of people who would benefit from it. So if I read off the doc site, it says Quadapp architects, Quadapp developers, business analysts, application testers, quality assurance analysts, security analysts, technical auditors. It's basically for anybody who wants to articulate and understand non-trivial Quadapp designs. And the non-trivial bit's quite important, because if you look at our samples, quite a lot of them are showing a particular idea. They're kind of showing that idea in isolation. What you find when you move to production Quadapps is they get more complex. You need to deal with, you know, what happens when it goes wrong, there's more parties involved, and you rapidly get to the point where it's quite difficult to reason about it by just writing code. You need an abstraction, and Quadapp design language gives you that visual abstraction so you can deal with more complex ideas.
Is there anyone out there who's actually used this and come back with, you know, a good experience of using CDL?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's mostly been our professional services clients. So I've I can't mention most of them, but the reception has been because of confidentiality, of course. But they're some of the familiar faces we see around the ecosystem. And they found it super useful having this just way to communicate the ideas. The one I can mention, because he made this comment on LinkedIn, was when we used it with IvKnow, it went really, really well. And he was very kind. He made a comment about my Quartercon talk, which people can see if they log into Quartercon, saying anybody who considers themselves a Quarter architect or designer needs to see this talk on CDL. So I was really pleased with that. So
a bit of who was that? Was that Ryan?
That was Ryan. Ryan from
Ryan Gledhill. There you go. AKA Skymaster Gledhill, I think is his nickname. Let's wrap things up then with how do you get started? You've listened to this talk, you think it's a bee's knees, you want to give it a go. How do you get started with Called Up Design Language?
We have just released a whole new section on the Corda doc site, which is exclusively about Corda design language. So if you go to the main doc site and it takes you all through it, if you just want an overview, there is an overview section, and that will just go through the what is it, who should use it, introduce some of the main ways we use to represent things, and give you that kind of 5-minute overview. But if you want to dive down into more detail, there's also detailed descriptions about how you build up each one of these diagramming techniques, detailed information about how to turn these diagrams into smart contracts, how to test them. And then there's also the app I mentioned in the 20 questions, which takes all of this stuff and shows you it, you know, in the code.
Awesome. Brilliant. Well, what a pleasure talking to you today, Matt. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with Corda Design Language, and I can't wait to see what the next public endorsement says about it.
Excellent. Thank you, Martin. Thank you for having me. It's been good fun.
Brilliant. Thank you.
That was Matt Bradbury, and you've been listening to another episode of From the Basement. You can find all the previous podcast episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. This show was narrated by Martin G, edited by Tess Shepherd-Smith, and was delivered to you first class by Oscar Postal Districts Bennett, all the way from the basement.